Welcome to the 2024 Empower Her Institute Girls to Greatness Teen Summit.
This year's theme, I am to be an affirmation. I am brave.
I am brave.
I am beautiful.
I am beautiful.
And I will be seen.
And I will be seen.
Yes.
We'll discuss race and how it plays a factor and how we didn't even talk about this topic because we were afraid.
A Black Executive Perspective.
We are coming to you live from the new BEP studio for another thought-provoking episode of A Black Executive Perspective podcast, a safe space where we discuss all matters regarding race, culture, and those uncomfortable topics people tend to avoid. I'm your host, Tony Tidbit. So before we get started in a fantastic episode, I want to remind everyone to make sure you check out our partners at Code M Magazine, whose mission is to save the Black family by first saving the Black man. So definitely check them out at CodeMMagazine.com. That is CodeMMagazine.com. So today, we sit with Dawn Brown, CEO of Empower Institute, to discuss how she's transforming lives through targeted educational programs that empower young women from marginalized communities in the LA area. From social emotional learning and mentorship to STEAM education rooted in social justice, this conversation will break down how tailored support and bold leadership can break generational cycles of poverty and foster a pipeline of confident, capable young women ready to lead. So let me tell you about my friend Dawn Brown. Dawn is the CEO of Empower Institute, where she has led the organization through transformative growth since 2020. Quadrupling its size, launching a bold new vision, and expanding impactful programs like the Social Justice STEAM Camp, Youth Philanthropy Project, and the Black Women's Nonprofit Leadership Forum. With over 25 years in nonprofit leadership, Dawn has championed policies and advocacy efforts that decriminalize sex trafficked girls, end of shackling of pregnant women, and fight gender bias in the juvenile justice system. A proud Washington, D.C. native, Dawn was inducted in the California Black Women Trailblazer Hall of Fame in 2024 and is also the creator of Stiletto Revolution, a podcast exploring the lives of Black women through a social justice lens. She holds degree from New York University's Tisch School of Arts and School of Education. Dawn brings her full self to every space. She's a visionary leader, performing artist, social justice advocate, and sparkling, loving powerhouse. Miss Powerhouse, Dawn Brown, welcome to A Black Executive Perspective podcast, my sister.
Thank you so much. Thank you for allowing me to be here with you today.
Are you kidding me? After all that, you know, I mean, all the things that you're doing, I'm thanking you, right? Because we definitely want to dive in into what you're doing and the effect and the change that you're bringing to our young sisters across the country. So before we get into the heavy stuff and get into the learning part, tell us a little bit where you're currently residing and a little bit about your family.
Yeah, so born and raised in D.C., as you mentioned. I currently live in Los Angeles, California. So I traded in the snow and the winter for sun and sand, and I'm very happy about that.
You know, that's right, right? I mean, I'm in Connecticut right now, and it's raining, but it's cold outside. We're in the end of March. This is supposed to be the first day of spring was last week, and you know, it still ain't showed up. But so I'm hearing that you're digging the sun and the sand, huh?
Yeah, listen, the beach is my happy place. So, you know, I didn't know that. I remember when I first moved out here, people were like, "What's your idea of nature?" And I was like, "Stilettos hitting concrete." You know? Now I'm like, "Oh, let's go take a hike."
Yeah. It's squirrels looking for nuts in the city.
Right?
That's my thing of nature, right? So I definitely understand that. You know what? I grew up in Detroit, Michigan. There wasn't a lot of beaches and stuff. I mean, you could have went to Lake Michigan or something of that nature. But moving out here on the East Coast, I definitely feel you, my sister. You know, I'm a beach person. I love the beach. Just love chilling. So we're definitely on the same wavelength when it comes to that. So the question I have for you, look, and we're going to dive into this. You're CEO of a core organization that you built from the ground up, that you have a lot of love and passion to be able to make it go. You're on a lot of different platforms. You're traveling. Tell me a little bit about why did you want to come on BEP to talk about this topic?
Yeah, so Empower Her Institute has been around for 22 years, and we do amazing work. We have amazing statistics and results, you know, from evaluations. But I always say that the thing that I hear the most is that we are the best kept secret in LA. And I'm like, I don't want to be a secret anymore. I'm tired of that. We want the world to know who we are. And especially now in this political climate, we really need the world to know who we are so that they can support us. Because listen, there is a real attack on women of color, specifically Black and brown women and girls. And so that has impacted us deeply. So we need the world to know so that they can support us. They can support us by volunteering and giving money, and they can celebrate and uplift our girls.
Well, guess what? I'm glad you're here because we're going to let the world know today of what you guys are doing. So you ready to talk about it, my sister?
Let's talk about it.
All right, let's talk about it. So look, let's back up because, you know, in 2020, there's a lot of things going on. We had a pandemic. We had the murder of George Floyd. We had a lot of different turmoil that was going on in the world, right? However, you went and discovered or created Empower Her. So talk about that journey and then talk about what was your vision when you walked in the door.
Yeah, so Empower Her Institute had been around for 17 years when I came in 2020. Its leader, Betty Lamar, she was the founder of the organization and had been the leader of the organization for the full 17 years. Betty was a pregnant teen who walked across her high school graduation stage pregnant. And she went on to, after some challenges, she ended up on public assistance. She went on to become a very successful exec in the tech world. So when she started Empower Her, this was really like her second act, right? And so she was ready to retire. And they found me through a search. I was actually in D.C. at the time. I had come back to D.C. to visit, to be with my family. And I like to say that I decided to take on this small nonprofit in the middle of Armageddon.
That's right. Exactly right.
It was serious. She sat me down and she said, look, I need you to take this on. I am ready. I'm ready to give this fully over to you and really go on. And she wanted to travel the world and live her life. She was in her 70s. And so youngest 70-year-old I have ever met, I'm gonna be honest with you. When I came in, I met with the board and I said, I'll only take this opportunity if you allow me, if you give me the space to lead this organization the way that I believe it needs to be led. And sometimes that's not going to be in agreement with what you are used to. So you got to be willing to embrace the change of this. And they did. And I remember one of them calling me after my interview, my final of many interviews, and saying, you like blackity black. Like, I kind of really like it. You're unapologetic. So I want you here. Right?
Oh, my God. You like black and black. Reminds me of one of those old Richard Pryor stand up when he was like, he went to Africa and he saw the blue black people. Right? They weren't just black. They were blue black.
Right. They were like, you are unapologetically black. Like you were just like, this is who I am, you know? And so I was like, look, this is where we need to be as a people at this point. But what I really wanted to do was sit down and assess where we were. And as an organization, we were focusing on teen dropout prevention and pregnancy prevention. And so when I came in, I said, congratulations, you did it. Those numbers are low. We've got to look at where we are today in 2020. And this was at a time of racial unrest, right? Mm-hmm. And civic unrest. And so I said, you know, I met with the girls, I met with other stakeholders, and I said, you know what, we're going to shift this to focus on breaking generational cycles of poverty, because we had this beautiful diamond that just needed to be polished. And the truth of the matter was that while, you know, we really needed to start to look at what was the next step. And the next step for me, in my opinion, was around economic justice, racial justice, gender justice, right? And educational equity for our young people. And so that's where I shifted the organization, changed the vision. We kept the mission, introduced a new vision that really sort of showed who we were today. And then I decided to shift to keep some of the programs that we had, but to grow it into the next level. And so, and offer new programming that was much more holistic. So we really were looking at the whole child and providing immersive educational opportunities. So they're not just getting exposed to careers, but they're actually getting immersed in that career now so that they're developing skills, right? Because that's the only way they're going to be able to compete on a global scale. And to be really honest and frank with them in conversations about what it looks like in the workplace, because we were talking about breaking ceilings and boldly breaking ceilings. And I'm like, you know what? I know what trauma looks like being a Black woman in an executive leadership role. And the truth of the matter is that you're going to experience a lot of trauma in this. And you are not, sometimes you're going to be the only face in the room. And so you've got to know how to navigate those spaces. And so right. I really wanted us to shift the curriculum so that we were having those frank and honest conversations with our girls. And so it really has been a healing experience for our staff, for myself, and for the young people, as well as the women who volunteer as mentors as we go through this process. And so we went from being a $300,000 organization to a $2 million organization in the first 2.5 years of my leadership in the organization. And we went from serving 300 girls to now serving over 1,000 girls, plus serving families and adult women as well.
Wow. I mean, that's number one. They definitely got the right person. Listen to the passion. Listen to it. I love how you talked about, hey, they had completed one level of it, and great job for that. But you saw it as a lot bigger, right? You wanted to take it to the next level to make it more holistic. Talk a little bit about, you know, what some of the pressing challenges that the young women, and obviously in LA, but, you know, all around the country that they're facing right now.
Yeah. So 99.5% of the girls that we serve are Black and brown girls. So, they are facing all of the traumas that come with being a teenager, just in general, because we know that that is its own thing. We are living in a whole different world. Teens are facing social media and public ridicule in a different way. The way they gather right. information, the way they process information, and their level of anxiety has increased significantly, right?
Right.
And their ability to cope with trauma has decreased. Now, in addition to that, they're dealing with being a girl in the world, so a teen and a girl in the world, and then being a Black and Latin girl in the world. And those are all these different layers. My girls say, there's layers to this, miss. And I'm like, yes, there are. There are different layers within that, right? And all of those layers come with different levels of trauma, from dealing with massage noir in the home, as well as in the classroom and in the workplace and in the world, to misogyny with machismo around like ideas of what women and men and the roles are in the household, to dealing with sexual assault and being hypersexualized, to Black girls being identified as dealing with adultification and being identified as adults and seen from that way, even when they are young because of their bodies and because of their skin color. So they're dealing with all of these things. And I think where we are in the world right now has only exacerbated what they were already going through. Right. And so now, you know, I remember having a conversation with a young lady who called me. She's in college now. She's been with us. She was with us from the 7th grade through 12th. Now she's in college studying urban planning at UCLA. And I remember her calling me one day and saying, right after this election, she called me and she said, I feel like we're about to enter a world where people don't like us.
It's time to rethink your protein. Agrilab's protein bars are crafted with high-quality protein, double the leucine, and enriched branched-chain amino acids, essential for optimal muscle recovery. Finally, a protein bar that works as hard as you do. So visit agrilabs.com and use the code BEP to get 20% off. That's agrilabs.com, promo code BEP.
And I was like, whew, like, you know what I mean? And she said, you have trained us and you spend so much time teaching us and telling us how powerful we are and how much, you know, how many opportunities we have and how we can change the world. And on one hand, she said, I feel like we really need to change the world right now. And on the other hand, it's really scary because I don't know if any of us are going to be here to change the world in the way that the world is is happening. Right. And that's hard as a leader to hold and hear, right? And so, you know, when we think about what they're facing today, they're dealing with everything from, you know, we know that that suicide has increased with Black girls by 30% over the past like 5 years, right? And so we know that we're dealing with everything from anxiety and trauma and depression to dealing with just really trying to embrace who you are, your skin color, your bodies, and your identity as a human being and as a woman in this earth.
Wow. I mean, number one, I'm just blown away of the things that you're bringing to the table. You can add self-esteem. There's a ton of things that, you know, single parent homes, not being able to not having mentors to help navigate, you know, not having the right parent in the house to say what a woman is, or having a vision and seeing seeing somebody that looks like them that they can emulate in a positive manner, right? So there's a million things that go into that you're definitely solving. You know, one of my questions, I'm curious because, you know, you could have ended up, you know, look, you went to New York University, you've been thriving in business, you were in D.C. doing your thing. You know, this role ain't for the faint of heart, okay? Because at the end of the day, yes, you're bringing a lot of positivity to it, but there's a lot of negative that you got to deal with on a daily basis to get to turn to a positive standpoint. You know, 9 times out of 10, and I love for you to, I'm gonna ask you this other question, but I'm just thinking, 9 times out of 10, the girls that you're dealing with, they're not thinking, I need somebody to save me. They're in a mindset, because they're in a certain environment, that that's all they see, so they think that's normal. Okay? And now here comes, you know, the powerful Dawn Brown from D.C. So what made you want to jump into this? Was there anything in terms of you seeing your own childhood growing up that way that you wanted to change? Talk a little bit about that.
I grew up in Washington, D.C. I grew up actually in a notorious housing project in Washington, D.C. In the 80s during the crack era. So that was life for me. And so I grew up in a time where literally you could come outside of your house and you would see chalk outlines, right? They were still doing those. And that was a normal thing. I also grew up in a community where while there was a lot of violence, there was also a lot of love and community. And so it was a normal thing for me to come home and see, you know, kids in the house wearing my clothes, eating food in the house. And I'm like, we barely got anything. You giving the food up? You know, my grandmother, you know, I'm like,
but you know what? You know what? You make a good point, because that's how my mom, that's how that community was, right?
Right.
Is that
right.
They would feed people. I come home, fridge empty, and, you know, other people, my friends over there rubbing their bellies. And that was good. Right. Thank you, Mrs. Franklin.
And that's how my grandmother was like, to whom much is given, much is required. Your mom has a job. She has multiple jobs, and she's in there working every day. These kids, they're, you know, some of them, their parents were addicted to drugs. They didn't, you know, they didn't have clean clothes, things of that sort. And so we really wrapped our arms around each other in that community. And the community wrapped their arms around me. I mean, the local drug dealer waited every morning. I went to a high school of the arts that was in Georgetown. So it was about an hour away through public transportation. And so I had to get up crazy early in the morning, and I had to be at school from 8:30 to 5:30 every day. That was for school hours, because it was a school of the arts. And so I was standing there at the bus stop at like 7 in the morning, 6:30, 7 in the morning, and it would still be dark out. And so the local drug dealer, the big one, he would stand there with me and wait until he would not do his job or start his business until I got on the bus. Because he wanted to make sure I was safe, right?
That's all. So every day, huh? Every day.
Every day, right? And he, if I didn't show up in two days in a row, he was knocking on the door. My mom was like, what you knocking on the door for? But, you know, that was like, but there was this sense of like, he, in his mind, it was, he literally would say, leave her alone. She's got, you know, that girl is going somewhere. She's
right.
Destined for bigger things. And so I understood the complexities of human beings, right? And the fact that no one is all good or all bad. We do things in order to survive. We do what we know. But when we know better, we have the opportunity to do better. My role is to really simply expose our girls to new opportunities. They have big dreams. I don't come into a program where the kids don't, you know, where they're like, I don't know what, I'm not going to do anything in life. I'm just going to, you know, stand on the corner. That's not what their mindsets are. They have big dreams. They just have no idea how to get there. They have no idea what that looks like. And a lot of times you hear kids say things like, well, I want to be a lawyer, but I'll probably just like, you know, be a secretary because that's what my mom does. Right. Mm-hmm. Or things like that. And there's nothing wrong with being a secretary. Absolutely nothing at all. But if your goal is to be a lawyer, if that's your dream, we want you to at least have the opportunity to get there. And so our goal is to break systemic barriers and to challenge them as much as possible and move them out the way so that our girls can really have the opportunity to reach their fullest potential.
That is awesome. I mean, number one, my girl, I love you so much. I mean, it's all about giving and making the world better for the next generation. I want to play a clip to give everybody a sense of what Empower Her is about. And then I love to hear your thoughts after.
Welcome to the 2024 Empower Her Institute Girls to Greatness Teen Summit.
The Empower Her Girls to Greatness Teen Summit is our love letter to you. We have worked hard to grow Empower Her Institute over the 21 years that we have existed. We wanted this year's theme, I Am, to be an affirmation. I am brave.
I am brave.
I am beautiful.
I am beautiful.
And I will be seen.
And I will be seen.
Yes, give yourselves a hand. All of our workshops are about exposing you to college and careers, supporting and nurturing your mental health, and helping you become more creative. Allow yourself to learn something new, to continue to do what we do every day, each day. We hope that you know that you are powerful beyond measure. You playing small does not serve the world. Your voices matter and deserve to be heard. This is a sisterhood, and we are here to support you on your journey to adulthood.
Wow, that's fantastic. I see your face as you were listening to it. It's your clip, it's your video, right? It was the 2024 Summit, Teen Summit. Just so powerful, and the energy and the kids. So talk a little bit about, you know, the academy and what you guys are doing there. Because there you guys are doing a lot.
Yeah, so we have our girls in our Leaders Academy. We start with our girls from the 7th grade, and we work with them through the 12th grade. So the middle schoolers are in the Girls Academy, and the high schoolers are in the Leaders Academy. And basically, at the core of our program is that we are actually in the classrooms. It is a class that they get a credit for. It is taught during the school day. My staff comes in and teaches, and they are actually learning about social-emotional learning. They are learning how to be how to identify who they are and what their identities are, and to define that, dealing with everything from confidence, self-confidence, to, you know, embracing their bodies, and the power of their voice. And they also, and at the same time, are learning about financial literacy. They are focusing on social justice STEAM. And so they start with self-advocacy, and by the end, they're learning about community advocacy and activism. And so the curriculum really gets more challenging every year to grow with them. So for instance, in like financial literacy, my middle schoolers may be learning about a budget, while my high schoolers are actually learning about investments, and we give them $100 to invest in their first stock. And so, you know, that's how all of the curriculum grows with them. And so that's what's happening during the school year with them. And that's what our academies are. And then in the summertime, and then we do have women who volunteer every month who come in, executives who volunteer, and they, you know, are able to do group mentoring with our girls. And we have some incredible women. I mean, we have ER doctors, we have college students, we have the highest ranking woman at Edison International. She's a senior VP. She comes and volunteers her time every month.
Wow.
And so, you know, they're incredible women who come and give and pour into our girls. And so in the summertime, we have our social justice STEAM camp and our workforce development programming. And so for our middle school and younger high schoolers, they can actually apply to be in. We take a smaller number of them because we're serving over 1,000 girls a year. So we take a smaller number of them from the in-school program into the summer program. And they actually are trained as marine biologists for the summer. So
wow.
It's a five-week, two-session camp. And the first session is 3 weeks where they are immersed in marine science. They are not only learning about coding, they learn how to code. They learn air quality testing. They're actually testing the air in their neighborhoods and comparing it to places like Malibu. They're living on a college campus, going to a science lab, going to museums and beaches, kayaking, snorkeling. It's crazy. And so they actually have to create projects at the end. And these are middle schoolers, right? And they're creating projects and early high schoolers. And they are creating projects where they are examining the impact of climate change on marine ecology and then comparing that to the impact on marginalized communities. And then with the second session of that, and it's really cool, the projects are crazy. So the second session of this, we take another subset of them who we think are ready, and they actually get to continue their exploration into marine science, and they get their PADI scuba diving certifications and their sailing certifications, which are both needed in order to be marine biologists. So my youngest certified scuba diver, she was 11 years old, 11-year-old black
girl. Wow, that's insane.
And so this summer we have been invited by the Tetiaroa Society to go to French Polynesia. So we're taking a group of them after the camp is over. We're going to take our certified scuba divers and our sailors to French Polynesia, and they're going to study for 10 days with scientists there. They're going to 3 different islands, and they're going to learn about coral reefs, and they're going to study the health and what we can do to save them. So, and immerse themselves in the culture. So we really are, they are future scientists, and on many levels, they are scientists today. And then for our high schoolers, we employ them. So we help them find jobs for the summer. Some of them work for us at the camp for the summer. They get paid $20 an hour. So, and we're probably going to go up to 21 this year, but they get paid above minimum wage. And the whole purpose of that is that I'm teaching them about all these amazing careers where they're underrepresented. We're teaching them how to negotiate their salaries. My kids aren't middle wage kids, so I'm not going to, you know, I got to pay them better than that. Right. And so you walk your talk. And so that's another component of our program. And then the girls themselves and the women, the girls were the ones who wanted the high school program. We were just doing middle school. They advocated mm-hmm. for high school. And then when they went to college, they started advocating for an adult program and for a women's program academy. And so we started our women's academy, which allows us to support women of color in navigating trauma in the workplace. And that's what that academy is all about. And so it has everything from a heal the healer space for men and women to our Black Women Nonprofit Leaders Forum, to various workshops. And then, of course, we provide services for our families, our parents. And so that's really what it is. I mean, our girls are doing everything from becoming philanthropists. They get trained as philanthropists. They give out funds. They're given money to give out, and nonprofits can apply, and they give funds out to, you know, scuba diving in French Polynesia, right? And everything in between. And in that, we're with them every step of the way. And we want to make sure that anything that gets in their way, we can help get out of the way. So even if it's something as simple as, Dawn, I'm unhoused and I don't have a place to stay right now. My family is sleeping in the car. I'm going to make sure that I get them into a hotel, and my case manager works with them to ultimately find them a home, a permanent home to live in, right? So anything from that to paying bills, because some dad passed away during COVID, right? To, you know, making sure that they are, you know, getting the tutoring that they need and finding someone, another nonprofit to link them with for that, to giving them college scholarships, because we do that as well. So there's a lot that we do as an organization. So when I say that we're challenging all the barriers, we really are. You know, I'm up there every day talking to my parents saying, you know, listen, don't pass on your generational trauma to them.
Right.
And so, right. You know, sometimes they get nervous about their kids going in the ocean because we train them in the ocean, not in the pool. And so they're going in the ocean and they can go as deep as 60 feet. Some of them are working towards their advanced degree, advanced certification. So they'll be going 100 feet by the end of next month. And so, you know, I have to say to them, listen, they can do this. And so when the parents back up, I have parents who say, you are the only one that I'm going to trust my baby with, you know,
right.
But, you know, it's all about making sure that we're challenging those barriers for our girls and for their parents so that they grow too, because we also are doing financial literacy courses for our parents and various courses for them too, so that the girls they can go home to a safe environment as well.
If you like what you hear and want to join us on this journey of making uncomfortable conversations comfortable, please subscribe to a Black Executive Perspective podcast on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hit subscribe now to stay connected for more episodes that challenge, inspire, and lead the change.
Right. I mean, that's an excellent point. Number one, I mean, my girl, I'm blown away. Okay. I'm just blown away. And you are the best kept secret, because you should be, you know, you should have been on the State of the Union up in the rafters, and the president says, Dawn Brown, stand up. And everybody clapping because of what you're doing for your community. It's fantastic. And you make a good point too, right? With the parents. You know, these are generational curses and stuff that people are dealing with. And sometimes the parent don't want to let go, okay? Because their vision is limited. And so, you know, when the daughter comes home and starts talking about being an astronaut or a biologist or, you know, whatever the case may be, the parent needs to be able to see that too. Because if they can't see it, and then your work or what you're doing, it can affect it. Because when the kid comes home, they need mommy and daddy to be like, oh yeah, you can. And they need to support what you're pushing as well. Will you agree with that or what?
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. You know, now I'll give you an example. I had a young lady who got accepted into Stanford University, and her parents, she came back and said, I'm not going to go. And I was like, well, what? Like, you got into Ivy League college.
Right. You kidding me. Yeah.
What you talking about, you know? And she said, well, my parents don't want me to go. And they're refusing to sign the paperwork for the FAFSA because they don't want me to leave L.A. And not only L.A., yeah, they didn't want her to leave L.A., the city of L.A. And I was like, okay, we need to have a conversation. And because it was a Latin family and, you know, I was trying to talk to the parents and they didn't, you know, and it wasn't resonating for them. They were just like, I don't want my baby out there. I called one of my girls who's at Syracuse University, who is a Latina girl who's at Syracuse University right now. She's a senior and she's pre-law. And so I told her what was going on and she said, oh, I had the same experience with my mom. But ultimately I went, let me call them. And so she called them because she understood from a cultural standpoint. And so she called, right? And then there are times when, you know, I have Black families who I've had, you know, who have said, look, I don't feel comfortable with her going into the ocean or learning how to swim. Ma'am, let's have a conversation. I know that big boat ride for us was scary, but we got to let this go, right? And so I literally can have that conversation with them. Like, let's talk
about it. It's relatable. This, you can relate to them, right?
Right. And so we're able to do that and really, you know, be able to have those conversations and break it down with our parents because, yeah, they're dealing with their own traumas. They're dealing with their own failed, you know, dreams. Some of them are dealing with their own addictions and depressions. And so and they are financially insecure. 96% of our kids live at or below the poverty level. So, you know, sometimes the idea of doing something is just too big for them.
Way beyond them. It's beyond them.
Way beyond them. And so my role is to step in. My team's role is to step in, have those conversations. If your child can go through the camp, the first session, even if she can't swim, she can't get in the second session without swimming. So guess what? was give her swimming lessons.
Right. Right?
Like, let her do it. Let her do it. If she believes she can do it, you got to believe it too, mom. Right. And so we do that. We have to step in. But I think it is important that we understand that parents are humans and they have their limitations too. You know, I grew up in a household with an amazing mom, but she had her limitations, right?
Correct.
Based on what she knew. And so I think it's important that we have the patience for that, but we also push them outside of their comfort zone too, that we don't just say, okay, they said no. I'm like, you didn't sign this permission slip? Give me your number. You know what I mean? I'm having those calls, right? Because and I tell my parents, your babies are my babies too. Like, I'm not going to let something happen to them. They are my babies too. I'm raising 1,050 girls in this world.
Right.
So that's important to me. And those girls know it. They know that they are my babies too.
I love that. So let's break this down though. Okay. Because you started off with 300 kids. Now you got 1,050. Okay. And they're doing things, scuba diving. You're giving them $100 when they get to high school to invest. If they don't have a place, you create a place for them by hotels. You're doing all these things that take money. Okay. So tell us a little bit of how you fund it and talk a little bit more about, because at the end of the day, you're saving. I get the word saving. Okay. So let's use the word helping. Let's use the word transforming. Let's use the word in terms of growth. Okay. So you're helping these kids. You're transforming them. The vision, or you're helping them reach their vision. You're putting them in places that they wouldn't even thought of. All right. You're exposing them to things that they would have never seen. You're helping them when they have financial situations, you know, with their family or whatever the case may be, right? How are you being funded to do all these things?
Well, we are a nonprofit organization, so we rely on the generosity of others. And so donations is how we function. We obviously, you know, have grown significantly. And so we did that through government grants, as well as corporate support and foundation grants. The majority of our funds have been, over the past few years, have been government support and grants and contracts. And then the second portion of that would be private foundations as well as corporations who give us funds. And then the third round of that would be our individual donors. So you can imagine the impact that we have suffered and experienced now with everything that is happening in the world.
With the new administration and stuff of that nature, correct?
Yes. So with the new administration, a lot of pretty much all of the federal grants that we had have no longer exist. And so they won't be renewed, or when they ended, that was it. They're done. We've had funds frozen. We're still trying to get paid for certain things that we've done, because then the way it works is that you do the work and then you get reimbursed for that. And so that has deeply impacted our ability to do our work. And it's scary, right? Because, for instance, the emergency fund that we have is at zero now, and it's always been very robust. But it's because that grant didn't go through, or because of didn't happen again. It just doesn't exist anymore. And because, you know, there are corporations that have made decisions to not support, people of color and communities of color, and they demonized this word into three letters of DEI.
So can you stop right there? Because I just want to put a pin right here for a second. So just so I'm clear, and obviously this is happening across the board, that companies that were providing dollars towards DEI programs, initiatives, whatever the case may be, they've now just immediately done a 180 and stopped doing it. Let me ask you this. Do they know exactly what you do? Before you say that,
okay.
Because at the end of the day, most of these companies that are canceling and withdrawn, they have no clue of what that money is doing and how it's, let's go back to transforming lives. So now I'll let you answer the question. Do they know what you're doing? Because if they knew what you were doing, I would be shocked that they were, no administration, no policy, no narrative should get in the way with that. Let me hear your thoughts.
Yeah, listen, I always say this, 100% of my middle schoolers matriculate into high school. 100% of my high schoolers not only graduate, but are accepted into college. 80% of my girls go into STEAM careers, right? So when you think about it, like, it's working. The program is working. And we do incredible programs. And yet, you know, when you ask, do they know exactly what you do, what they do? Listen, I send the proposals. I have the meetings. So they know, some of them have even come out, a few of them have come out and seen the girls, and they love it. They love it, and they have always supported us. Before people started jumping on the DEI bandwagon, and it was, you know, really just simply about supporting communities, and, you know, equity inclusion has always been important. We just didn't demonize it into three letters, right? And now they're running scared. And so I've literally had, you know, corporations call me. And big ones. I'm not going to say names, but some pretty big ones. Sometimes I feel like, why am I protecting you when you don't protect me? But, right. You know, some really big ones who have called and said, look, I'm trying to figure out a way to support you. But, you know, you're not on the safe list because you serve those Black girls, you know, because of the
website. That is insane.
And so I've had people say that, you know.
That is insane. Let's talk a little bit about. What happens, you know, talk a little bit, let's dive a little bit further into that. In terms of this narrative, a DEI, right? Which is really a false narrative to divide people. Yeah. Okay. It's a narrative now that everybody who's a DEI is not qualified. They got a job based on they were just Black, or they're driving around with a dump truck and just riding around saying, hey, you need a job, you need a job. And they're just giving these people jobs for no. And we know that's not true. Okay. We know that. But now, instead of everybody pushing back, especially these corporations, to be fair, who know it's not true. Let me ask you this. You have a lot of statistics about your girls and what you're doing. You are a very intelligent person who uses data to back up and substantiate what you're doing and how it's affecting lives. Let me ask you this question, because I've asked this question before and nobody, matter of fact, I know the answer. Okay. Name me a company over the last 5 years since they incorporated DEI that their roles, their employment roles, increase substantially 5-10% of people of color. Where is that company? There is none. There is none. But it doesn't matter. This narrative is out there, right? Which we know it's not true. And the same companies that's, I don't need to know their names because I already know. The same companies that are saying, hey, we can't give you this dollar because I'm scared. They know it's not true, but they don't have the guts to stand up and say, you know what? F you. You know, this, we're going to continue to do this, right? Not only is the right thing to do, but more importantly, as a community, as a corporation and a community, we want these people to buy our stuff. Okay, we want them to sign up for our things. We want them to fly on our flights. We want them to buy our cars. But we're not going to help invest in the same community because somebody is telling me, well, you can't do that or I'm going to get you. Talk a little bit about that and the effect.
Yeah, so the impact is great. You know, it's funny because so one of the things that we do, we have a board of, obviously we're nonprofit, we have a board of directors. Well, we have youth who sit on, we have two young people who sit on our board of directors and they are full voting members. And I remember having this conversation with my board recently about the whole situation. I kept throwing out DEI, and they were throwing it out. And so one of the girls said, who's a senior in high school, she said, well, what is DEI? Right? And I was like, and part of me was like, girl, you've been in this program since the seventh grade. And you don't know what that is. And then I thought about it, and I was like, well, we've never actually used that term with them because that's not how we see this. We
just
we do, right?
Exactly.
And so I explained to them what it was and they were like, oh, okay. And then they went, so why is that a bad thing? And I was like, we all trying to figure that part out, right? Like, we haven't figured that out. And, you know, but what I think about it is that at the end of the day, we're engaging girls in STEM. We're engaging girls in careers and helping them to honestly help the government in the fact that they don't have to go on public assistance. They're not getting additional support from the government. They are actually, nothing wrong with that, but they are actually able to contribute more taxes and things of that sort because they are getting robust jobs and incredible opportunities. And yet they are being seen as these three letters, right? And that impact is tremendous. It's tremendous on their esteem. But beyond that, it stops us from being able to do what we do. You know, there are days when I honestly am like, I don't know if we're going to get through payroll, or I don't know if we're going to get through this year or next, you know, the next 4 years. And the only way that we can do that is if the community takes a grassroots approach and wraps their arms around these nonprofits. I think that is important for the community to understand that we are very responsible with our dollars. We're not making these robust salaries. I took a six-figure cut to take this job, right? Pay cut to take this job. And I had no problem doing it because I believed in this work and I believed in the girls. And so, you know, I think that it's important for us to, you know, look at this differently and say, nobody's going to come save us. Nobody's going to, you know, we can't lean on these corporations. We can't lean on these government funds because they are iffy. We've got to do it ourselves. And if we care about our young people, then we've got to step up and support them, right? Because I have literally, we have 12 partner schools right now, all Title I schools. We have a long wait list of other schools that want to partner with us. I can't take anyone off of that wait list right now. I literally, in the beginning of this year, in January, turned down 100 girls for our program simply because I was like, I can't. I don't know where the budget is going to come from, right? And so that's a scary thing. The idea that we take them on college tours and that's the only time they go out of state. And so they've gotten to go to Atlanta and D.C. And, you know, to have a young person say to me afterwards and write me a letter and say, oh, my God, I tried Ethiopian food for the first time. And I got to, you know, see a school called Johns Hopkins, which I didn't even know existed. And now that's my dream school. So I'm changing all my whole high school schedule so that I can go to that school. Right. To have a young person write me a letter that says that after going on this trip and then have to look at my budget this year and say, I think I'm gonna have to cut the college tour out, right? That's devastating. Or even the event that you showed, that our Girls to Greatness Teen Summit, which happens once a year, that's an incredible event where we take 650 of our girls and we bring them together at the convention center and they get this powerful day of workshops and education and celebration. And, you know, for me this year to have to look and say, cut it down to 500 this year, right? And I don't know if we're going to do one after this because I don't know what it's going to look like for us. That's a scary place to be because I know that we are changing lives. I know that we are shifting narratives. You know, I didn't even mention other programs that we do, you know, and so there's so many things. Even at the Teen Summit, for instance, the girls, we take high school girls in our program, train them as because they said they wanted to learn. We trained them to get their CPR certification and first aid. And then I said, wait, we're a career program. So now they're going to learn how to train the trainer. So they actually became certified as trainers in CPR.
Right.
So now they train adults. These are 16 and 17 years that are out there doing that. At that event, we teach a CPR first aid class that they teach, the high schoolers teach to middle schoolers and get them trained and certified. Right.
Wow.
And so those are the kinds of things that we're doing. Right. Real employable skills that they can come out with, you know, and giving them these incredible experiences and to be able to look now and say, I've worked so hard to get us to this place and I don't know what's going to happen. But all I can do is keep doing what I'm doing and pray real hard and come up with as many plans and backup plans as I can. But some of those things are going to mean cutting services or cutting programming or cutting, you know, our emergency fund, right? And that is devastating. Is it not devastating? You know, there's, you know, I think on some level people think about it from an ego standpoint, like, oh, she worked so hard, now she's got to
you know, cut these things. I don't care about how hard I work. What I care about is the fact that I have to look a child in the eye and say, we can't take you this year.
Right.
You know, or I have to look a parent in the eye and say, I don't know how I can't, you know, get you out of that car. Right. And when you're calling other, I'm calling other, my case managers are calling other agencies and they're saying, girl, we are full, you know, because they pulled
right.
everybody.
Right. Everybody's dealing with the same stuff.
And so it's not, you know, everybody is dealing with it. And so I think people don't always get the humanness of what's happening. Like we look at these letters, but when you talk about impact and you talk about people being running scared and companies running scared, I always have to step back and go, these are human beings' lives
Correct.
That you're playing with, right?
Correct.
This
Correct.
Is not about letters. This is not about skin color. This is about human beings. And I know that every one of those young people, I got kids studying aeronautical engineering in college from Watts, right? And so, you know, I know those girls worked hard to get into those schools. And it was not it was not any kind of handout that they received in order to get there. I bust my butt to get into the college that I got into, you know? And so I think it's really important that we look at the humanness of what's happening right now and how our world will be worse off if we don't make a shift. And I mean, we got to stand up strong and hard and say, you know what? I'm going to stop looking at this as DEI. I'm going to stop looking at this as these three letters. I'm going to start looking at this as STEM programming. I'm going to start looking at this as leadership programming. I'm going to start looking at this as college readiness and career readiness, because that's what this is. You know,
right.
at the end of the day, we're just trying to make sure that everyone has a fair opportunity
right.
and, you know, and that they can compete on a global scale. And so
right.
when people start looking at it from that perspective, there will be a shift. But somebody's got to be bold to do it.
Number one, thank you for that. And number two, you're 100% right. Number three, I want to back up to what you said a minute ago, and I'd like to get specifics, because you said, hey, it's time that the community wraps their arm around us from a nonprofit standpoint. Give me specifics. What specifically can the community do? Let's look at the community. What can they do to wrap their arms to help you guys continue to thrive and survive?
So there are, there are three things that majorly that they can do. One, well, I would say four, actually, or four major things. One, open your wallets. Right. We can't do this work.
That's right.
Without,
tell them what time
you know,
it is.
Bills.
Right. Yeah. Talk
I got
straight.
Bills,
look
like,
them dead in the eye
bills, like
and say,
too,
say
right?
what time it is. Exactly.
So first thing is open your wallets. You know, go on empower.org and make a donation. And if you want to make a real significant investment, if you are someone who can afford to make a significant investment, pick up the phone and call me or email me, and we could have a real conversation about that, because that's what we need. We need people to make investments right now. So, you know, every dollar matters, and the big dollars move and change things, right? And so I say, you know, make a donation. Two, open up your Rolodexes. Not just give a donation yourself, but who else do you know that you believes in this work and can support this organization, right? And if it's not us, someone else in whatever organization you believe in, but I hope it's us, right? And so, you know, that's number two, is open up your Rolodex. Help us get the right people. Get me the meetings with the right people. Number three is, you know, volunteer your time, you know, give of your time. So to help us continue, you know, we need mentors. We need women who are going to mentor in those classrooms and at our summit. So volunteer your time. Don't think because you volunteered your time, you shouldn't make a donation. Do them both. And number four.
You can do two things at once, right?
You can do two things at once, right? And so, you know, and number four is elevate the work. Make sure that, you know, my name and the name of this organization should be spoken in rooms where we are not in, so that other in the right powerful spaces, so that other people learn about us and want to support us. And that goes back to opening up that Rolodex. And so those are really the four things. And so I thank you, Tony, because you elevated our work today, and that's important.
Well, number one, well, thank you. But I thank you. But I'm going to make a donation as well. So if somebody wanted to chat with you or speak to you directly, how do they contact you?
Yes. So I'm a little scared to give out my email because then everybody and mama gonna be calling me.
Well, can they go to your website and contact you?
So yes, they can email us at info@empowerher.org. So if you send us an email at that, and it's empower.org. So if you send us an email there, we check it every day. My assistant will forward it to me or to the proper staff person that can support you.
That is awesome. You know, here's the thing. So we're going to definitely push this out. I have a kinship with you just because of what you're doing. And the passion in terms of what you're doing. And like you said, these aren't girls. These are my girls. And I have 1,050 of them that I want to make sure that they can be able to live their dreams and, you know, jump on this trampoline that's going to lift them up and for them to start on that journey. Right. And I get it from a monetary standpoint that it's tough this year because of the different policies that's going on. All that being said, have you thought about, you know, expanding this, you know, nationwide? Because what you're doing, and look, obviously it takes money to do that. I get all that, right? But I would love to hear your thoughts because, I mean, you could do this all over and the impact. There's 1,050 girls in the LA area that you're working with, but there's probably 100,000 girls around the country that could benefit from all the things that you're doing. Think about that and I know you think about it from a visionary standpoint, but think about the lives that can be transformed. So speak a little bit about that.
I'm glad that you brought that up because, you know, when I came into Empower Her, I introduced a 6-year growth and expansion plan. And so the first part of that was to strengthen and grow us, you know, locally. Which we've done. We went, like I said, from 4 schools to, you know, 12 schools now, you know, 300 girls to 1,000. So, you know, the goal was to look at us locally and really strengthen our infrastructure and strengthen our abilities to support more girls locally and so to saturate that market. And then to look at statewide growth and then national. And so that was part of the plan. So year 6 next year should have been the year that I begin to have meetings about national expansion with the goal of expanding into a new site by 28. That is still our dream, but we've had to push it back a little bit just because of all that's happening in the world. But our vision, our goal, and I'm not going to rest until we have grown nationally, because I want every little girl who wants to be an Empower Her Girl to be an Empower Her Girl, right? And so I agree with you. There are hundreds of thousands of girls throughout the country who would love to be a part of something like this and deserve to be a part of something like this, you know? And so, yes, that is something that we definitely want to do. We're looking for investors who will support that goal of growing and expanding nationally. You know, we want to strengthen locally first, and then we want to financially strengthen locally. And then, you know, invest, because we have the curriculum. We created our own curriculum. We have that already in place. So we have a plan for expansion. We even partnered with Green Dot Schools, which is one of our school partners, which is national, so that once we're ready, they've already identified schools in other states. And so when we're ready, we actually are able to do that as well.
I love it. I love it. That is awesome, my sister. I love how you play chess and not checkers, right? Which is great. Final thoughts. What do you want to leave the audience, my sister?
Yeah. So, you know what? I would love for you to think about, one, making sure that you are investing your money and your time in things that you believe in. It's great to say, oh, that's a great organization. And, you know, I love it, but walk your talk, right? And so don't just say that's great, but really do something. Get out there and do something. So if I can leave you with anything, it's that. And then also, our girls, they need us right now. And not only do they need us, they deserve us. And they deserve the best of who we are. And right now, our country is not behaving at our best, right? We all need to be put in time out. And so I really, truly, you know, want you to just, at the end of the day, I want all of your listeners to just take a moment and think about the fact that our girls, they don't just need us, they deserve us, and they deserve the best of who we are. And so I encourage you to make sure that you're bringing your best to the table.
Well, guess what, my sister? You brought your best to the table here on the Black Executive Perspective podcast, and you bring your best to the table every day at Empower Her. So we want to thank you for coming on and sharing this story, which is very important. Final question. How could BEP help you?
Yeah. So elevate the work, elevate our voice. You said you're going to make a donation, so I'll be looking for that.
you come back on. Again. Someone, he reneged on you.
Don't make me have to come after you, Tony.
No, I got you, my sister. I got you.
Really. And you talk to other, you are talking to execs every day. You know, I made a decision to, forgo a corporate world in order to go into an arts world in order to go into nonprofit. I know you're talking to execs from all various worlds, you know, let them know about us. But ultimately I appreciate that again, that you are elevating our voice today, because that's important. Again, we don't want to be the best kept secret anymore. So I appreciate what you have done, and those four things apply to BEP as well.
Well, thank you, my sister. And I am so appreciative that you were able to invest the time today to come on and share about what you're doing. And our goal is to help you find the funding, help you be able to not only help the 1,050 young ladies that you're dealing with in the LA area, but then expand statewide and then expand nationwide, right? Because you're a godsend. And what you're doing is very important. And any corporation that's out there that's listening or watching to a Black Executive Perspective podcast, I ask you now, as you heard and watched this story, I ask you to really take a step back and think about what your organization really believes in. As you see here, there's an opportunity to change lives. And don't be afraid, because the thing is, a lot of companies are just canceling their money in these different type of programs because they see them just as a nomenclature on an Excel sheet, okay? And they don't see it as human beings. Well, you heard and watched today. How could you not support this organization based on everything that they're doing? Some of these young girls may be future employees. That's going to help change your organization. Take out the policy. Stop with the negativity and focus on the humanity. Because if you don't see this as being a positive thing to invest in, then I don't know what you believe in. I don't know what you stand for. And you have to reevaluate who you are as an organization. So I just want to thank my sister, Dawn Brown, CEO of Empower Her, for coming on a Black Executive Perspective podcast, sharing her story, talking about her girls and the passion that she has now and will continue to have to change and transform lives in the future. So I think it's now time for
Tony's Tidbit.
And the tidbit today, breaking cycles start with believing girls deserve more than survival. They deserve to lead, to innovate, and to thrive. When we shift from rescuing to resourcing, from pity to power, we just don't change their story. We change the world they will one day run. And you heard a lot of that from our sister, Dawn Brown. So don't forget to check out the next Need to Know by Dr. Nasinga Burton. Dr. Burton comes on a weekly on the Black Executive Perspective podcast to dive into the timely and crucial topics that shape our community and world that you don't have time to focus on. Tune in to gain unique insights and to deepen your understanding of these issues that matter. Don't miss her every Thursday on a Black Executive Perspective podcast. And you don't want to miss our next episode of Pull Up, Speak Up, where bold, unfiltered voices tackle the most provocative issues. Our roundtable provides their smart perspectives, real talk, and a call to action. This is just not an episode. This is a revolution. So don't forget to check out Pull Up, Speak Up from a Black Executive Perspective podcast. For those who follow us and watch BEP all the time, you know this is the time frame where we go into our call to action. If this is your first time listening or watching a Black Executive Perspective podcast, our mission, our goal is to eliminate all forms of discrimination. To do this, we're asking everyone to embrace the acronym LESS, L-E-S-S. And L stands for learn. We want everyone to educate yourself on racial and cultural nuances. Learn about people that you're not familiar with, which is going to enlighten you. After you learn, then you have the letter E, which stands for empathy. This way you can understand diverse perspectives since you learn about your fellow human beings. And now since you've walked in their shoes, you have a better perspective of what they're going through. And then after empathy, we have the letter S, which stands for share. Now you want to share your insights that you learn to all your friends and family so they can become enlightened as well. And then the final S stands for stop. We want to actively stop discrimination as it walks in our path. So if Aunt Jenny or Uncle Joe say something that's inappropriate at the Sunday dinner table, you say, Aunt Jenny, Uncle Joe, we don't believe that. We don't say that. And you stop it right there. So if everyone can incorporate less, and this is in your control, LESS will build a more fair, more understanding world, and we'll all see the change that we want to see because less will become more. Don't forget to continue to follow a Black Executive Perspective podcast on and watch our episodes on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can follow us on our social channels of X, YouTube, TikTok, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram at a Black Exec. For our fabulous guest, the CEO of Empower Her, Dawn Brown, we want to thank her for joining. I'm Tony Tidbit. We talked about it. We learned about it. We're going to continue to strive about it, and we're going to thrive about it, and we love you. And guess what? Now we're out.
A Black Executive Perspective.